Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Hello, Business Radio X viewers. We are so happy to be here. This is LeaderCast. I am Pat Hurston and your host today. We are so happy to have with us women from Core Inc. We have Jennifer Henn and Jennifer Bartle. I am so excited about the work that these ladies do, and I want all of our listeners to know about all this great work. So get ready, strap up. It's going to be wonderful. First of all, I understand if you go on their website, everybody's named Jennifer. So I'm just telling you up front. So we have the dynamic duo here. So Jennifer Henn is the executive director and co-founder of Core Inc. and Jennifer Bartle, who is the chief operating officer of Core Inc. Good morning, ladies. How are you?
Great. How are you, Pat? Great. Thanks so much for having us.
Good morning.
Oh, we are so happy to have you. So, you know, I am just meeting you ladies and just learning about CORE. Can you tell me a little bit about what is CORE? How did it come about?
Sure. So the three Jennifers, there are three of us who co-founded CORE, have crossed paths and worked together for the past several years, and seen some of this in action and realized this is what we want to do. We all three of us have a passion for helping today's youth who are struggling with trauma, poverty and racial-based inequities in education. And so just sat down and said, let's do it. We can do it. And so we really are the dynamic trio, and we bring three different backgrounds and skill sets to create one kind of awesome group of women who are really determined to make a difference in the education space in Atlanta.
And I understand that you guys just formed the organization. It's like a infant, and it's in its infancy. And,
it is.
But yet, you guys have done such great work. So Jennifer Bartle, how long have you guys had a CORE? What does CORE mean? How did you come up with the name?
So we started CORE in August of this year. So we are still a baby. It's been about 6 months. We named it CORE because it is the root word of courage. It means heart and love, and we feel as though that is really the spirit and the philosophy behind the work that we do.
And so let's talk a little bit about what is it that you do, Jennifer Henn?
Sure.
Yeah. I have to be careful because I can't just say Jennifer, right?
Well, you can say Jen Henn.
Oh, Jen Henn. I love that.
And my middle name is Lynn. So if you want to, you can say Jen Lynn Henn.
That's very so.
So what we do is we are in a school, embedded in the school, Monday through Friday, the entire day of school, and we stay after and work with the kids on homework or have a movie night or do a club. And so we're there every day, all day. We provide a marketplace where they can get food, clothes, hygiene items, school supplies. And then we have a drop-in center that's very much a safe and inclusive space. It's very student-oriented. In fact, we really want their input on what they want in the space. And as you and I were talking, Pat, earlier, we are just now this week getting set up in the space. We've got couches. We've got tables. We've got a little bar height table that they can sit and do their homework at. We've got games. We did invest in a Pac-Man machine.
And it is amazing. Game,
and it shockingly is drawing the students over. We've got a little de-escalation area. If the kids are, you know, having an issue in their class, they can come and put some headphones on, you know, chill in the corner until they can kind of get themselves together, and then we can really talk through what's at the root of their anger or frustration. And so all this is just creating a very safe and comfortable space for them to come in so that we can build relationships and then really start working on what's going on. How can we help you?
How fantastic. So you're in one school, as I understand. Now, what community do you serve?
We are in Carver High School, which is in Southwest Atlanta.
Okay. And tell us a little bit about the students that you serve. What is that population? And I guess it's only for that school. There are not other students that are coming in. Is that right?
Correct. Okay. It's just for the Carver High School students. It is run by Purpose Built Atlanta. We partner with Atlanta Public Schools as well as Purpose Built Schools of Atlanta. And there is a cluster of schools. This is the high school. There's a middle school, Price Middle School, and two elementary schools, Slater and Thomasville Heights. And the area that Carver is in is really one of the most economically disadvantaged areas in the state of Georgia, which is really the main reason that we picked it. We worked with APS to kind of identify the school that really needed our help the most, and this is where they recommended. We met with the principal and the staff at the school, and they are really excited about us and really are bought into what we want to bring to the school. So the kids that come to the school live obviously around there. We went and delivered some Thanksgiving meals to families, and so we got to see an apartment complex where a majority of the families live. And honestly, it's uninhabitable, I would say, but families live there. There are, the day we went, it was, I want to say 34 degrees outside, something like that. And, the majority of the apartments have sheets in place of windows. So there were Batman sheets hanging out, instead of windows. And many of them, the same thing for doors. It's just a sheet instead of a door. So it's freezing, outside. And then Jennifer actually, you want to talk about when you went in to take the meal and what you saw inside?
Sure, sure. Just, you know, like you, she said, the apartments are really uninhabitable. And so we knew that families that we would be working with were living in poverty. And I've had, you know, years of experience working in that type of a setting. This is not like anything I had seen. It was deplorable. Mm-hmm. And so, but the, you know, families were happy to get a Thanksgiving meal. They were so grateful that we were there. And it, for us, it was a way of making a connection. I think food connects folks. Mm-hmm. And Southern, you know, comfortable home cooking, sweet potato pies for Thanksgiving really connected people. And that's that way of bringing folks into the school. A lot of the families that we work with, it's difficult for them to get to the school, whether it's a transportation issue or perhaps their job doesn't allow them to take time off to get to the school. So if their kids are struggling or their students are struggling, the school doesn't always seem like a resource to them. So we're trying to make that kind of bridge that gap so that we can be out in the community and saying, you know, maybe I met you because I brought you a Thanksgiving meal. Maybe I met you because you needed another resource. But now we're connected. Why don't you come up to the school and then we
can. It's building that trust.
It's building that trust.
Yeah, that's excellent. So when you all started this in August, how did you get the students to come? Like, what did they think it was and was not? And were they sort of apprehensive about even coming into the space that you have?
So the school already had a food pantry and a clothing closet. So we kind of took that on and organized it. I mean, from the beginning, it was really just as simple as organizing the closet. When we first walked in there, it was just bags and mounds of clothes all over the floor. So just the simple act of hanging up and organizing and making it a nice space for them.
Right.
Like, and so when they first walked in, it was really, oh my gosh, you guys did this for us? This is, and then we had a wonderful group of volunteers from Jack and Jill come in and bring probably 30 puffy coats.
Excellent.
And a bunch of other clothes, and they helped us to organize it as well. So when the students came in after we took it over and saw new items, coats with tags on, kind of an organized, hung up clothing, that kind of, I think, drew them in. And then with us just being there on the food bank distribution days and working alongside them and talking through, this is healthy food and this is how you would eat. You know, there were some things like a black bean burger that they didn't necessarily know what that was. So just talking through that with them. And in the future, what we've decided is, to kind of have it be like Costco. We're going to make up a little sample of everything we're giving and let them taste it, and so that they know kind of what it is. Do I like this? Do I not like this? And just making it a personable experience for them instead of just, you know, coming, grabbing and leaving, and to create again those relationships with
the families. So it started out as sort of a resource if you need food, if you need to get clothing, and now it's sort of a hangout spot.
Right. We're trying to add to it and supplement that. So the school did a good job of identifying that not only did the students at that school need food and clothing, but so did those in the community. So at Carver High School, the food pantry and the clothing closet are open to the community. Okay. So you don't have to have students at that school to access. So we really are trying to make an impact in the community where the school sits.
Yeah.
And it was neat to see some of the students that we work with that first day in the coats. And so then they would come up and give you a hug and thank you for the coat. Now you've got that relationship.
Exactly.
For us, it's, you know, let's remember their names. Let's write them down and try to get those mental cues so we can remember every child's name, because then that's that personable. Hey, so-and-so, it's good to see you again. How are you doing? How was your class? One young man told us about his college journey and where he's hoping to get into school. And so Jennifer Henn always remembers to ask him, did you get your letter from Howard yet? Have you heard? Did you get accepted?
Oh, wonderful.
So those sorts of things make those relationships so that when we opened up the student space, kids just came.
Because it's a safe space. They know that you care.
Right. It's that caring adult relationship.
Exactly. Exactly. And then that extends to the parents because of the community. You're offering food and they can come too. So tell me, you guys had started this 6 months ago. Let me just say that I'm just like in awe of what you've done.
Thank you.
And you had a life before that because you had to make some money and you have families. Tell me, Jennifer Henn, tell me, what did you do before? What prepared you for this? And what was the aching that you had? And how did you get all three of the Jennifers together to do this?
Well, I would say I'm definitely the outsider because I'm an accountant. I went to school to be an accountant, a CPA. The other Jennifers are really, you know, they're the therapists. They're the clinicians. They get these kids. And so, I worked for Coca-Cola, worked for Ernst & Young, and, you know, wonderful experiences. And then I was fortunate enough to be able to take, retired for 13 years to stay home with my kids. And through that experience and being really involved in their school and, you know, I'm the first to say that we are very privileged. My kids have pretty much whatever they want. We, you know, if they want to play basketball, I will sign you up for the rec league and I will, you know, get you a tutor for something that you're struggling with. And so seeing that and then seeing the opposite of that and what, these kids don't have that my kids just have and the opportunities, that my kids have that every kid should have. There's no reason that kids should not be able to go play Little League if they want to play, if they love basketball or be in drama or pursue dance if that's what they love. Besides that, there's no reason that kids should be hungry coming to school. So we're not even talking about getting all the extras. We're talking about these kids not having food or a safe place to sleep or clothes. And so that just really started gnawing at me, several years ago. And, you know, as my kids have grown up and I've got 2 out of 3 in college, so I have a little bit more time on my hands. And then I met these lovely ladies and it just became obvious that we could do something and so in my past life as an accountant, I manage the money and these ladies take care of the kiddos.
That is great. First of all, that you didn't have to do this. And you were really pulled and drawn into it, which is just fantastic to see that. I mean, one of the things that, if you go on my LinkedIn page, I am very focused on women and children issues because these children have to get educated and they are definitely our future. So to see people who have the, resources to put this together and help people in less, privileged communities is just fantastic. I love you ladies already. Jennifer Bartle, tell me, how did you get involved? What's your path to this?
I've been working in the field of community mental health. I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist for about 21 years. So this has always been where my passion has lie. Yeah. And, it's just what I've always done. And I learned years and years ago that really where the work is in the school. So community mental health is great, and it's one piece of what we need to serve all of our communities. But for students who are already struggling in school, to pull them out of school, to go to a doctor's appointment, to miss class, for a parent who may be struggling, who if they don't go to work, they don't get paid, to take their time off work, to go. So we knew that it just made sense for us to be in the school, and we weren't quite sure what that would look like. So I've done a couple different iterations of a school-based programming before, and really realized that being, and I think what makes our program unique is that being in the school, being there every day, we don't just come on, you know, whatever day, we're there and we are embedded and part of the school culture and climate.
That is excellent. And then you have one more, Jennifer.
We certainly do.
And tell us a little bit about her.
So in her previous life, she worked with homeless youth. And so she's, you know, got this passion and for the kids, and she's a licensed
A licensed clinical social worker. She has been working with young people experiencing homelessness and disadvantaged and disenfranchised kids for years. And so it just made sense for the three of us to come together. We've got the experience raising children, working with children, being in the school, understanding how schools work, understanding mental health, understanding community mental health, the nonprofit space, grant writing, budget, fundraising and development. We really are the dream team.
You are the dream team.
And
we
keep saying how easy this was for us to kind of, for this all to come together. And we're just shocked with our, you know, just good fortune and how it's come together. But we also say, you know, we all three worked really hard over the past 20 years to make this come together. We've created relationships to where we can ask someone to be on our board and have an amazing board team because of the relationships that we built in our previous life, in our former jobs, or in just working at school, you know, with my kids' families at schools. So it's just really all part of what we've done in the past that has made this kind of, it's just easier than we thought it was going to be.
Yeah. You know, you brought up something that I want to ask you a little bit, because I know some of our listeners say, hey, what am I going to do next? And I'm thinking about nonprofits, because I always tell people nonprofits are not for the faint of heart. Okay.
No, ma'am.
And you're not going to get rich. Tell me, what was the planning before you actually launched? You've been in business for, if you will, for six months old, but there had to be a lot of planning going forward. How long did it take you, and what was that all about?
So we, again, leveraged our previous relationships. We talked to attorneys. We talked to some folks in APS that we had relationships with. We talked with community fundraisers and philanthropy organizations, really at first to say, does Atlanta really need another nonprofit? And is this a space that needs to be filled? Is there a gap? And the resounding answer was yes from all of those people. And so then it was a matter of so now logistically, what do we do? And so we worked with an attorney who was super helpful in getting our 501c3 and getting our board set up and all of the, you know, board requirements. And just each step of the way, we just used our resources to say, help us with this.
And what was that timeline like?
Probably, I would say we really started just talking about it in February.
Wow.
So less than a year that we were just able to kind of talk through to see if it was even something that was viable,
that was possible. Yeah,
so
that was very much divine order, you know,
really was.
Exactly.
It really was.
So tell me, so now that you've been in this for about 6 years, and you clearly did some research, and you, Jennifer Bartle, have been in this space, and the other Jennifer as well, tell me, what surprised you the most? And what was what's the biggest challenge you have right now?
One of the challenges, I think, is a big challenge, is that schools are expected to be everything. And so teachers are expected to teach. They're expected to manage their classroom, behavior. They're expected to identify kids that might be struggling for one reason or another, identify learning disabilities. They're also expected to be a little bit of a counselor and check in with kids and see what's going on with them. And we know that kids who are living in poverty, kids who are experiencing racism, have an exponentially higher rate of trauma just getting out of bed in the morning and getting to school. So what we realized was that if we could take some of that burden off of the teachers, off of the administrators, provide them, one, some training on how to manage these sorts of things that as clinicians we're trained to manage, but then also how do they connect those students to what they need so that they can stay at school. Ultimately, our goal is to keep kids in the classroom, keep them in the school successful so that they can graduate.
And so were you, what was your biggest surprise when you got into this and started to dealing with the students and the parents?
I would say for me, it was the extent of poverty. I mean, really just.
And on the edge of hopelessness, right?
I wouldn't even say on the edge. Yeah. I would say really.
I was trying to be.
Yes. Yes. I mean, it's just, you know, it was surprising to me. And I will say even talking with some of the school administration, some of their teachers, new teachers who as she was saying, have come from New York City, have said, we've never seen poverty like this.
Wow.
And so just experiencing that and seeing that and yet the kids are resilient. They'll come to school, you know, and just be happy at school.
Yeah, well, they don't know any, just, you know, that's their world. Yeah.
Yeah. And so really meeting that, Maslow's hierarchy of needs, you know, these kids can't learn, if the basic needs aren't met.
Food, exactly.
You know, and so that's where we start really is just those really basic needs.
Tell me, who do you partner with? One of the things before you answer that question, I want to say I applaud you for starting small, if you will. So you're in a school and trying to make a difference there. Even being in one school, tell me who else do you partner with? Clearly APS.
Right.
But
we couldn't do this without our partnership with Atlanta Public Schools.
Yeah.
And Carver is managed and run by purpose-built schools. So those are our two biggest partners. There are also other resources in the school. So we really feel like an integrated care model is important. So there are no wrong doors. If you come to CORE and you need Atlanta volunteer lawyers who are also on our campus, we'll make sure you get connected. If you start with Atlanta volunteer lawyers and they say they need housing or they need food, they may connect them back to us. Chris 180 does mental health counseling on campus, and they can see a percentage of the population of kids. But if that therapist caseload is full, somebody may refer that client to myself or the other Jen for therapy, as we're both licensed clinicians. So we're really making sure that whatever services kids need, they can get. And then we're also identifying what else is there. So are there partnerships for jobs? We couldn't do this without the help of the Atlanta Food Bank. So one Tuesday a month, they bring out pallets full of food. We stock the food pantry, and then that's what's open to the families.
Wow, that is really great. Tell me, I know you've only been in the school for about 6 months. Do you have a success story to share?
I would say I'll start and then you.
Okay.
I know you've got one. And I would say just as we were talking, you know, we've just really started building the drop-in center this week. And the kids are already coming. To me, that's a success story is that we're getting kids there and they want to be there. And so it's the beginning of these relationships that I really feel like are going to prove so beneficial to them. You know, and that we're building this trust already, that we've got a group of 8 to 10 kids who have come every single day this week. So,
you can tell that the relationship, they want that relationship. That's important. And a relationship with a caring adult is immeasurable. The impact that it can have on a young person. We've also had opportunities to identify some significant mental health issues, including a young person who was considering suicide.
Wow.
So there are definitely opportunities being there. And it takes all of us. So a teacher may hear something and then they'll pass it on to us. A student may not feel comfortable talking to one teacher, but they may tell the person from communities and schools who's also on our campus. And so the more caring, concerned, trained, and educated adults that are there, the more opportunities we have to make sure that kids have what they need.
And to your point, the integration and working with each other, I'm sure the teachers really appreciate they have a resource that they can handle for the students right now.
Yes.
And we can take you to this room and there's people who can help you. That's got to be rewarding for you.
I was going to say, we had the parent liaison came over this week and said, I've got a family. The mom has called. Grandma just passed away. And it's really, really having an impact on the kids. We need food. The kids need clothes. Can you help us? And, you know, yes, we would love to. So just being able to be there, be seen as a resource by the teachers and the administration.
And giving that immediate,
that
immediate help. That is outstanding. Tell me, what is your, when you think about where you are today, 6 months into it, and I got to tell you, ladies, if you've done this in 6 months, I just can't wait to see what you're going to do in the next. But say a year from now, what is your vision? We talked about success story being that the students are coming. What would you see your vision? What would you consider a big success a year from now? What would it look like?
I'd love to see some student leaders. So I'd love to see some of the young people that are coming now get really involved in CORE in our space as leaders mm-hmm. for other young people. We see already that that's how some of them come to the space. There were a few leaders that were helping out in the clothing closet and the food pantry, and then they told others, hey, these are the folks that are over at CORE. Let's go see what they're doing. And then they brought more kids. So I'd like to see some opportunities for kids to get involved, not just coming to take part in the services, but also become members of our team.
Yeah, and be leaders. You, Jen?
And I'd like to see really us, like we talked about, having an impact on the entire community. And so if it means we're looking for a partnership with Amerigroup to bring healthcare to the community, let's make sure these folks are enrolled in Medicaid and get them signed up. Let's get a clinic there once a month. Let's make sure these kids are getting their well checks and vaccines. So just bringing those kind of services. We're meeting also with Get Out the Vote, and let's have some candidate forums there so that the community and families really feel like their voices are heard, because I think a lot of times they think nobody wants to hear what
They're
I
not.
Have to say.
Yeah.
Yeah. So just really, again, bringing those additional resources and partnerships to the school, to the families, and to the community.
So tell me, when the school year is out, are you also open? Will you still be in the school during the summer?
We will. And then we'll try to continue those relationships that we made throughout the school year. That may be an opportunity for us to do some training. There's a period of time where the students are out, but the teachers are still there for professional development. And it's important for us to be able to educate them, particularly about adverse childhood experiences and what trauma can do to a young person and what post-traumatic stress disorder or PTSD looks like. And so some of our kids are more likely to have post-traumatic stress disorder than somebody returning from war.
Yeah.
And I would love for that concept of adverse childhood experiences, or ACEs, to be something that is talked about in school, is trained about, and that teachers feel like they've got access to that resource.
Yeah. I'm glad to hear that the students will have some place to come during the summer. Well, I bet you ladies need some help, like money, right?
Yes, ma'am.
So,
did we fail to mention that was our biggest challenge?
Yeah, right. That's exactly right. I mean, any nonprofit. So tell our listeners, A, how they can get involved. Personally, you do have volunteers, I suspect. And then tell them where they can donate and really contact you, because we've got a lot of corporate listeners. I'm sure they are interested in this. And what people like is that you have a very focused, you got an area that you are wanting to help that community, and companies want to do that in addition to their employees. And so tell us how they can contact you.
So the best way is just to go on our website, www.whatsyourcore.org. Core is just C-O-R.org. There's all sorts of resources there. We've got an Amazon wish list, of the needs that we've got. Or you can shoot us an email at info@whatsyourcore.org is the best way to get in touch with us.
And you got that big fat donate button.
There is
you
a
cannot
big
miss it.
Red
you
donate
cannot
button.
Miss it. Yes. And we want folks who can give of their time. They can give of their resources if they have monetary donations that they'd like to give or become monthly sustaining donors or their talents. So if you have something that you can share with the kids, we would love to meet you.
Great. I appreciate you ladies being on our show today. One of the things that I think is good, and we'll talk about this going forward, is your point, Jennifer Bartle, about developing leaders. That's what LeaderCast does. And so we're very interested in doing what we can to help you in that development of leaders. Thank you for to being with us today. And I would just remind all of our listeners that LeaderCast has a big event coming up May 7th. And we will be at the Infinite Energy Center. And our theme is positive disruption. So go on our website, LeaderCast.com. Look for LeaderCast Live and you can sign up. In addition, make sure that you go to the core website, whatsyourcore.org, and make sure you donate. Make sure you give of your time and help. Thank you, ladies.
Thank you.
And everybody have a great day.